Today is Friday, May 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. A plane crashes in Pakistan with more than 100 on board as rescuers continue looking for survivors while many are feared dead. Plus, the latest from Hong Kong as Beijing moves to implement new security laws.
The Hong Kong people see this move as undermining one country, two systems.
And the Philippines' largest broadcaster faces a tough choice. We'll have those stories and more next. A Pakistani International Airlines plane with 99 passengers and 8 crew members on board crashed Friday in a residential area in the southern Pakistani city of Karachi. Officials have not yet given a death toll, although they say it does appear that most on the plane have perished. The crash also appears to have killed or injured many people on the ground. Pakistan media quote officials saying that it was an Airbus 320 operated by the state-run Pakistani International Airlines that was arriving in Karachi from the city of Lahore. Multiple civilian and military rescue agencies arrived at the scene soon after the crash, the cause of which is still being investigated. There are currently over 5.1 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 around the world. British researchers testing an experimental vaccine against the new coronavirus are moving into advanced studies and aim to test it on more than 10,000 people to determine if the shot works. Last month, scientists at Oxford University began injecting more than 1,000 volunteers with their vaccine candidate in a preliminary trial designed to test its safety. Oxford Vaccine Group said the scientists predicted there may be enough positive data about the vaccine's effectiveness to move forward with mass production relatively soon, with the possibility of results that would allow the use of the vaccine on a wider scale. But the company acknowledged there are still many challenges ahead, including how long it will take to prove the vaccine works and any potential manufacturing complications. The news comes as an international aid group says about 661,000 people in 19 countries have been displaced by armed conflict in the past 2 months since the United Nations Secretary General called for a global ceasefire to help curb the coronavirus pandemic. The Norwegian Refugee Council said in a report released Friday that the bulk of the newly displaced people are in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but that large numbers have also been uprooted in Yemen, Afghanistan, Chad, and Niger. Researchers say stress and alcohol consumption during the COVID-19 pandemic is likely to increase rates of family violence in Australia. Research has found that a fifth of Australians have bought more alcohol than usual during the lockdowns. As Phil Mercer reports, 70% are drinking more.
Health campaigns are urging Australians not to turn to alcohol because of concerns about the coronavirus.
None of us could ever imagine finding ourselves in this situation. So it's okay to feel stressed, it's okay to feel anxious and a little bit uncertain. But we just need to be careful that we're not using alcohol.
Recent research, though, shows that 20% of Australian households have bought more alcohol than usual during the crisis. Katerina Giorgi is the chief executive of Australia's Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education.
We found that 1 in 5 households are purchasing more alcohol. And when we looked at these households, we found that 70% are drinking more and that a third are worried about their drinking or the drinking of someone in their household. We also found that these people are drinking earlier in the day and they're more likely to drink daily. And that contributes to larger problems down the track, including alcohol dependence and alcohol-fueled chronic diseases like cancer.
There are likely to be other more sinister consequences too. Australian courts have heard more cases of domestic violence and paramedics are responding to more emergency calls. The police have conducted dozens of random checks on known offenders and victims. In the Northern Territory, doctors have reported a 15% increase in the number of people requiring surgery due to family violence. Collated national figures are not yet available, but Nicole Lee, a professor at Curtin University's National Drug Research Institute, believes rates of domestic abuse will increase.
Alcohol consumption's got quite a complex relationship with family violence, but while we don't have any data about the rates of family violence during lockdown, I expect that we would see an increase in family violence. That's especially likely because increased stress in the household and increases in unemployment.
More funding is being given to crisis support services for victims of violence in the home. Australia's alcohol industry denies the survey findings. It says overall, Australian beer, wine and spirits consumption is lower than it was a year ago because of pandemic-related closures of pubs, bars and restaurants. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
When even rich countries have a hard time containing COVID-19, what happens to developing countries where electricity is not a given and clean water is scarce? These countries need ventilators, medical oxygen, masks, and other supplies to help them get through the pandemic. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on a program that is funding innovations where they are so desperately needed.
In Sao Paulo, the death toll from COVID-19 is so high, it's a struggle to get the dead buried. Overwhelmed healthcare workers and hospitals in much of Latin America care for the sick with far fewer resources than in Europe or the United States. In South Africa, people line up to get tested. All of the African countries have recorded cases of coronavirus.
I'm John Kelly, the founder and CEO of Atomo Diagnostics.
Atomo Diagnostics makes HIV test kits. Now it's gearing up to produce blood-based tests for COVID-19. Ventilators are badly needed in developing countries. Portable, battery-run ventilators are critical for healthcare. Gradient Health Systems makes these ventilators for African countries and provides training and technical support. Lena Said heads Gradient Health Systems, a nonprofit medical technology company.
So if it breaks or there's, you know, an issue with it, there's someone immediately able to fix it. And
once the pandemic is over, Said says Gradient's ventilators will still be in place.
So what we see it as a very layered approach and a long-term approach to not only just a response to COVID-19, but how do you build preparedness for the next inevitable thing that may come our way.
In India, girls cannot attend school regularly, and women have difficulty keeping their jobs unless they have menstrual pads. Enter Soral Design Solutions. Now the company is retooling machinery to make face masks as well, with a grant from Grand Challenges Canada, an operation that supports innovators in low- and middle-income countries. Carly Silver is one of the co-directors of Grand Challenges Canada.
So what we're doing now is just accelerating by putting more attention, more funding, and more support into the innovations we had previously funded.
Silver says the funding is provided by a number of investors, including the Canadian government.
We had already invested in several different innovations to increase the access of medical oxygen in areas of the world where that is not as common as we see in developed countries. And that's exactly the kind of first line treatment that is needed for severe COVID.
The goal is to provide aid during the pandemic. But when it's over, these countries will be better able to provide reliable medical care going forward. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Eid al-Fitr, the most festive Muslim holiday, is marked with celebrations, friends and family reunions, and a lot of feasting. This year, the coronavirus threatens to dampen that spirit. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports on how Muslims in various parts of the world are planning to celebrate Eid this year.
Shops are finally open in Pakistan after a nearly two-month lockdown because of the coronavirus. It's days before Eid and customers are rushing to make up for lost time. The crowds in many bazaars are ignoring warnings and guidelines to protect against coronavirus. Rosina Abbasi is roaming around in an overcrowded bazaar without a face mask.
I don't think it's such a big deal. I want people to continue their lives and routines as usual. Whatever is fated to happen will happen.
Unlike Pakistan, many countries, such as Egypt, are still closed. Eid al-Fitr marks the biggest shopping season in most Muslim countries. But this year, many businesses will feel the pain of lost income. 19-year-old Kareem Mohammed works in a shoe store in Cairo.
Last year there were clients, there was movement, we were able to work. There was a source of income. Now there is no income, there is no season, we do not feel the season, we do not feel the hay.
Some countries, like Indonesia, have even banned the special group prayers for Eid. Others, like Saudi Arabia, are urging people to pray at home. And some, like Iran, are only allowing Eid prayers in open spaces with social distancing. The celebrations and outings that people have grown accustomed to on Eid will not be around this year. As Hajia Rukayat Usman told us from Nigeria.
The normal rituals is after the Salah day, on that day, people go out to visit friends and families. But these days it should be minimized.
That has led many to think of creative ways to bring some kind of normalcy in this abnormal situation. Sehrish Lodi in Islamabad is preparing to hold video calls with family and friends.
This will be a kind of digital Eid. People will wish each other on phone calls or video calls. I think everyone will get ready and make videos, but won't be able to do much else.
People with children, like Sami Mahmoud of Cairo, are particularly concerned with creating a festive atmosphere at home.
We can take them to the balcony, bring them balloons at home, create for them an atmosphere of joy and happiness of the Eid, so they don't feel like we are in a catastrophe.
In one New Jersey county in the U.S., a Muslim mayor, Hamiduddin, has come up with a unique plan.
For us in Teaneck, I'm going to have, front yard parties, where basically everybody can go out in the front yard, you set up your chairs, you set up your table, and if you want to, people can drive by, and that's the way we're going to all see each other.
One thing is for certain, people will long remember this year's Eid as one of hardship and restrictions. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
And still to come,
they are losing 35 million pesos or about $690,000 every single day that they are not airing.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say that spiral galaxies, like our own Milky Way, form and accumulate much of their mass gradually. A new study published in the journal Nature may provide scientists with an alternate method of galaxy formation. The study details the discovery of a huge gassy and ancient disk galaxy nearly 12.4 billion light years away, the most distant rotating galaxy observed so far. The disk galaxy is nicknamed the Wolf Disk after the late astronomer Arthur Wolf. According to the study, this massive disk galaxy is rotating some 272 kilometers per second, which is about the same as the Milky Way. Study researchers used the ALMA telescope in Chile, the National Science Foundation's Carl G. Jansky Very Large Array, and the NASA ESA Hubble Space Telescope to make their discovery. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. A proposal to impose national security laws in Hong Kong could see mainland intelligence agencies set up bases in the global financial hub, raising fears of direct enforcement by Chinese authorities in a city and the prospect of fresh protests. Critics see the move as a historical turning point for the freest city under Beijing's rules. Now, to get the details, I spoke with Ria Mogul via Skype.
No one was expecting it really when China announced yesterday that they would impose these new national laws. And make no mistake about it, by doing so, Beijing has sent a very clear message to Hong Kong, and that is that they are tightening their grip on the special administrative region. So these laws, when passed, would give the Chinese Communist Party more control over Hong Kong. Today, actually, is when the annual gathering of the National People's Congress kicks off in Beijing, and they are likely to approve this law, which would curb sedition, secession, foreign interference here in Hong Kong. And this law would actually be implemented through a rarely used method that would bypass Hong Kong's legislature.
Yeah, can you explain how that mechanism works? Because Hong Kong is governed under the basic law, the mini constitution that was put into effect after the handoff.
That's right. So in fact, a little bit of background. In 2003, about 500,000 people took to the streets to protest against the implementation of Article 23 of the basic law. And as you said, the basic law is this, is Hong Kong's de facto constitution. Now, Article 23 would have allowed Hong Kong to enact laws on its own to prohibit any act of secession, sedition, and subversion against China. And after the peaceful demonstrations, the legislation was subsequently shelved. And now there's a little loophole that is in the basic law, and it's called Annex 3. And Beijing would be using this to completely bypass Hong Kong's legislature to implement these new national laws 17 years after 500,000 people peacefully demonstrated their frustration.
Now, this is coming after several months of protests, sometimes violent, last year. What do we know about why Beijing is implementing this now? And then, you know, what's been the reaction, you know, to this move in Hong Kong?
As expected, Steve, there is absolute outrage here in Hong Kong. The Hong Kong people see this move as undermining one country, two systems, which is what was put into place when the British left Hong Kong in 1997. And, you know, Hong Kong was officially supposed to become part of China in 2047. And many activists are saying that this will be the end of Hong Kong as we know it. And the reason that Beijing has come down so hard is, of course, as you mentioned, last year's anti-government movement, what started as a series of peaceful protests against the now shelved extradition bill soon, you know, morphed into these often violent displays of dissent against Beijing's encroachment into Hong Kong and the alleged police brutality and what people saw as an erosion of freedoms, of their rights.
What are you hearing about people possibly getting together to voice their concerns about this implementation of Article 23?
Yeah, in fact, you know, last night as well, the anger was rife. Just hours after the new law was announced, people took to Telegram, which is the social media app that's used by protesters, and messages were flying about to gather in various districts in defiance of China's announcement. And people did gather in, you know, districts that are closer to the border of China, and police, riot police were gathered in these districts as well. And there have been calls for more demonstrations to take place tonight and over the weekend as well. There were calls for some protests to emerge during the day, but not much has transpired. But we'll just have to wait and see whether anything will happen this weekend and whether anything will take place tonight as well.
Ria Mogul is a journalist living in Hong Kong. And a few hours ago, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said via Twitter that the U.S. condemns the PRC proposal to impose national security legislation on Hong Kong. He also said, "We stand with the people of Hong Kong." India authorities have begun assessing damage and clearing roads in the wake of Cyclone Amphan that killed more than 90 people and left millions displaced after barreling through coastal communities in eastern India and neighboring Bangladesh. In western Bengal state, which bore the brunt of the storm that caused extensive flooding in Calcutta, police and teams from India's National Disaster Response Force removed fallen trees and other debris, repaired communication lines, and started getting hundreds of thousands of people out of shelters. Myanmar says it will submit a report due Saturday outlining its record of compliance with an order from the International Court of Justice to protect members of the Muslim Rohingya ethnic minority. The court agreed last year to consider a case alleging that Myanmar committed genocide against the group, an accusation the government vigorously denies. The court's proceedings are likely to continue for years. Myanmar's military in August of 2017 launched what it called a clearance campaign in the Rakhine State in response to an attack by a Rohingya insurgent group. The campaign forced about 740,000 Rohingya to flee to neighboring Bangladesh and led to accusations that security forces committed mass rapes and killings and burned thousands of homes. ABS-CBN, the Philippines' largest broadcaster, has been off the terrestrial airwaves since May 5th after the government failed to renew its franchise license. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte repeatedly threatened to block the renewal of ABS-CBN's franchise license after the channel angered him during the 2016 presidential election by refusing to air his campaign commercial. ABS-CBN said the National Telecommunications Commission abused its discretion when it ordered its closure even after it indicated in March the broadcasting company could remain on the air pending its license renewal. A bill was moving through the legislature to get the network back to regular broadcasts, but as Quezon City-based reporter Stanley Gahete tells me via Skype, that doesn't look likely to happen anytime soon.
The House of Representatives will finally conduct a congressional hearing on the franchise renewal of ABS-CBN on Tuesday, May 26. This may be a joint hearing with the House Committee on Good Government. Last May 19, Tuesday, Cayetano decided to fully withdraw his bid to have House Bill No. 6732 approved, abandoning the bill that would have reopened ABS-CBN sooner rather than later, or what we call the proposed provisional franchise, which would be effective for 6 months or till October 31, just in case. And now they opted to take the longer route of committee deliberations. Congressmen decided to take up the network's long-pending application of a new 25-year operating franchise. Speaker Alan Peter Cayetano said yesterday, May 21, that President Rodrigo Duterte has never interfered as the lower house took steps to address the ABS-CBN franchise. Cayetano defended President Duterte from accusations made by different representatives that he dictated how Congress must act on ABS-CBN's application for a renewal of their legislative franchise. Cayetano said the House panel will continue to conduct long hearings until all parties are heard. He aired hopes that the House panel will be able to submit its recommendation by August 2020.
So, Stanley, I guess I want to follow up. You know, what exactly is ABS-CBN going to do? Because when the franchise license expired May 4th, all the employees were told to report back to work, and they started doing broadcasts online and through different digital platforms were not covered by the franchise license. So what's the organization going to do now?
So when ABS-CBN used different platforms after it was closed by National Telecommunications Commission, now ABS-CBN recently this morning made a general meeting that the President Carlo Katigbak of ABS-CBN announced that they will start making lists by June for the retrenchment process. Retrenchment means, of course, they will eventually, little by little, decrease in the number of employees if the Congress will not approve the franchise, the long 25-year franchise by August 2020. I talked to some of the employees of ABS-CBN recently and with some colleagues of in ABS-CBN before, former colleagues in ABS-CBN with some of the reporters, and they said that it was a very sad day for them because the ABS-CBN is now preparing for the cut off, and they said that some of the employees are now receiving half of their salaries, of their monthly salaries, because, you know, as the President Katigbak said during the Senate hearing last Tuesday, they were so transparent that they are losing 35 million pesos or about 690,000 US dollars every single day that they are not airing.
Stanley Gahete is a journalist living in Quezon City in the Philippines. Two journalists were arrested in Harare while working on a story about recent abductions. Frank Chikawore and Samuel Takawira are the two freelance journalists that have been reported as having been arrested. Now, this is a continuing and developing story, and as we have additional details, we will share them with you. Recently, the Zimbabwe Media Commission announced that they will resume journalist accreditation, but with some changes to the process. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day and a fantastic weekend.